Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, where we export Swedish unicorness.
No buzzwords, just real life stories with Sweden's most innovative thinkers and doers. A podcast made by me, Sandra Bourbon.
And me, Sara Hermansson.
Why are some of the world's most successful companies able to stay ahead of disruption, adopting and implementing innovation strategies while others struggle? That is probably not because they hire a new CEO or expensive consultants, but rather because they have a new way of adopting strategy. Today, we'll talk to Kurt Matzler, who is one of four co-authors of the new book Open Strategy, Mastering Disruption from Outside the C-Suite. Kurt is our first guest that is not Swedish, and that is because this book applies wherever you are in the world. We talked to Kurt about what is open strategy, how should you organize yourself in order to succeed with open strategy, how can you think of disrupting your existing business model, and do you need to create a separate entity to make this work? Could talk about the biggest challenges when it comes to open strategy and how to handle sensitive information. We also talk about leadership and the top management's role. Could also give the best advice on how to start to implement open strategy and, if you really want to get started, where to start. In this episode, Kurt shares a lot of interesting examples of how the most successful companies in the world has implemented open strategy and how they work with it. So, let's talk to Kurt. Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, Kurt Matzler.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's such a great pleasure. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you, and you're the professor of the strategic management at University of Innsbruck. You're also academic director of executive MBA program at MCI in Innsbruck, and also a partner at the international management consulting firm IMP. But you are here because you are one of the co-authors, I would say, of the book Open Strategy. And it's you. We will talk more about the book today and how companies can use open strategy to excel in their innovation work. But I want to start off, like, you are one of four authors. Why are you four authors, and how did it, like, the whole process start of writing this book Open Strategy?
Okay, yeah, that's a long story. It started more than 10 years ago, and we had done a lot of research on crowdsourcing and innovation here at Innsbruck University. And I had a doctoral student who had the idea to use crowdsourcing for strategy projects, and he found a company, and he developed an online platform to involve all employees in strategy discussions. And that worked so well that we decided to write a paper. So we published a paper. And then I started to give talks to practitioners explaining this idea, describing this example. And that generated a lot of ideas. At the same time, Stefan, one of the co-authors, who is a CEO of the consulting firm, started with some new approaches making strategy, and he developed some tools for open strategy. And that has become so successful that we thought about writing a book, but we never managed to start. But then about 4 years ago, I asked Christian and Julia whether they would be interested to join us to write a book, and they were excited. So we started the project about 4 years ago, and Christian and Julia, we have been working together for many years in academia.
Yeah, I think it's so fun that you're actually four authors, because the thing I think that you talk about a lot in open strategy is like to this diversity of perspective, and that I guess that you really will have when you're four people writing a book.
Exactly. One of them is a practitioner, Stefan, who is the CEO of the consulting firm, but he's also a professor at the university. I'm a professor. I'm also partner of IMP, so I'm also doing a lot of consulting. And Julia and Christian, they also are professors with different backgrounds. So we have a lot of diversity, and diversity is a cornerstone of open strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. But if we back up, like for the people that haven't read your book, Open Strategy, I highly recommend it. I have read it, of course. What is open strategy?
Let me first give you a very simple definition of strategy. Strategy is about answering three questions. Where are we now? Where do we want to go? And how do we get there? And open strategy means that you involve a lot of people answering these questions. They can be inside the company, people that usually are not part in a strategy team or a strategy process, like frontline employees, or people outside the company. That can be experts, it can be startups, it can be customers, suppliers, even competitors. So this way companies can tap into the collective wisdom of crowds, and that has two large benefits. First, you develop better strategies because you get a lot more input, better ideas. And second, if you involve those that are responsible for implementing the strategy, there is much more commitment and buy-in among the employees.
Is open strategy a new thing? Or is it, has it existed for
actually
a long time?
No, it's relatively new. The idea has been around for a long time. We know open innovation, open source, open government, etc. So there is a lot of openness around. But the idea of using these tools, crowdsourcing to strategy processes, that itself is kind of new. Yes.
Yeah, I think Do you need to involve external people, or is it enough to maybe involve, because I know that the subtitle of your book is like Mastering Disruption from Outside the C-Suite. So it's to involve more people than the C-Suite. Do you need to use external people, or can you do open strategy with maybe frontline workers, all people from your from your company or organization?
Both. You can involve outsiders, you can involve employees from your organization, frontline employees, etc., or even a combination. It depends on the project. If you want to develop a disruptive new business model, we recommend to involve outsiders because they bring in a lot of new perspectives, fresh ideas, and disruption usually starts in other industries. So if you involve people from other industries, you get more ideas. If it is more about formulating a strategy or implementing a strategy or fine-tuning a strategy, then it is recommendable to involve internals, frontline employees, because they have a lot of operational knowledge you need in developing or fine-tuning your strategy. So it depends a little bit on the project you want to do.
Yeah, like when it comes to open strategy, and that is more important now than ever, what are like the forces behind that?
Well, it is basically disruption. There are some studies that find about 70% of all companies in a wide variety of industries see new technology as disruptive to their business models, in the sense that they make the existing business model obsolete. About 70% of the companies that face a disruption in their industry fail. So the book has been written in the context of disruption, and therefore open strategy is very well suited in a context where you need new disruptive ideas.
Yeah. So you can say it's connected to like the technology, like it's moving faster and faster in the time that we're living in now, or has it a lot to do with the technology, like the effect on the business model?
Exactly. It's the speed, of course. And it's also a phenomenon we call recombinant innovation. Recombinant innovation means there are so many new technologies emerging, especially digital technologies. And knowledge builds upon itself in a combinatoric feedback process. The more we know, the more new combinations are possible. So more new technologies that can be combined into new business models leads to more opportunity. And that means more and more complexity. And open strategy is one way first to understand what is happening out there. And second, to bring everything together in new business models.
Yeah. Like what is happening out there in the book, you have the tool called Trend Radar. It was really, really good because I think when you look at trends, usually it's so like one dimensional, two, if you're lucky. But in this Trend Radar, you talk about like weak signals as well. We had Anne Lindmark, this part of program director at the Swedish innovation agency, Vinnova, that is like managed by the government. She talked about these weak signals as well, because it's easy to see maybe strong signals. But can you explain like what is weak signals and why is it important to keep track of these?
Yeah, there is a very good quote by Andy Grove, former CEO of Intel. He once said, "When spring comes, snow begins to melt at the periphery." And this is where you have to look at. We need an outside view, because disruption does not start at the center, usually. It starts at the periphery. It starts in other industries. It starts in small market niches, etc. And therefore, it is so important to open up.
Yeah. Because I think like in the in the past, people say that, okay, you couldn't foresee like the electricity innovation, you know, all these big leaps that we have been doing. But if you keep track of the weak signals, maybe actually you have a possibility to look at these huge leaps. Do you think that?
Yes. When we talk about disruption, incumbents usually have two problems. The first one is seeing those weak signals. Seeing when things change, that is difficult enough. And the second challenge then is once you have seen that there is a change, reacting and making decisions. And very often disruption means that you have to basically kill your existing business to implement a new disruptive business model. There is a lot of internal resistance.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it open strategy? Is it for a specific type of organization, or does it fit all organizations to apply open strategy?
Basically, it works for every type of organization. We have small companies, we have big companies, we have non-government organizations, we have for-profit organizations. So it basically works for every type of company, as long as they have an open mindset and an open culture, and management is ready for openness, transparency, and inclusion. It works particularly well for companies that have openness in their DNA, open source companies, for example. Red Hat is one of the pioneers of open strategy. They said another approach would not have worked. It would not have been accepted in their company. But as a general rule, I would say the more radical the change in your strategy is, the better open strategy is suited.
Yeah. But let's say that you want to apply open strategy and the culture is not that open at the moment. Is it something that you can change over time and you can still pursue open strategy?
Well, if the culture is not there, it is very difficult.
Yeah.
It starts with the leaders. Leaders need to have a very open mindset. What we see very often, companies that are skeptical towards open strategy, they don't have the mindset. Very often they have the We know it from open innovation, the not invented here syndrome. So they don't really accept ideas that come from the outside. So that is very often a problem. We recommend if a company wants to start with open strategy and is not yet ready to fully open, we recommend to open up gradually. Start with our small projects to see what works and what does not work. And then you can step by step increase.
Yeah. Is it possible to, maybe it doesn't need to come from like top management. Let's say that I read your book and I may be a manager for a business unit of like 100 people. Can I start to apply open strategy in that business area and try it out like myself? If my like CEO, he or she is not interested in open strategy for the moment.
Definitely. It could work. We describe one example. It's a fascinating one in our book. It's a Telefonica, Spanish company. Back in 2009, a group of employees began to use Yammer, which is a social network, to discuss topics about customer engagement. There was absolutely no formal management sponsorship for that project. But then management realized this works well. There were a couple of thousand employees on that social network discussing these topics. So they decided to use Yammer and open up their executive summit to 1,300 leaders using this social network technology. And that worked so well that 2 years later, 125,000 employees worldwide were invited to participate in the online strategy debate prior to the summit. And 3 years later, the summit was open to all employees and it was broadcast live and employees could comment in real time. So it started very small by an employee initiative and then top management realized, wow, this is really working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like great, like grassroots. It started from somewhere and then it became bigger and bigger and then the management like, okay, this is something that we actually can pursue with the value.
Exactly.
That was like a great success story. Do you have like any success story from Swedish organizations when it comes to open strategy?
Yes, we found a great example, Ericsson.
Yeah.
Ericsson, director of strategic analysis many years ago, was seeking new ways to facilitate experimentation and learning among employees. So he initiated an online community. He called it Strategy Perspectives. That was open to all employees, regardless of rank. And they participated in discussions about business planning, created a stream of discourse that would influence Ericsson's formal strategy-making process. And this Strategy Perspectives community grew and grew, and in 2018 had more than 2,000 registered members, and there was a very rich, high-quality discourse that touched a lot of topics of Ericsson formal business strategy and technology-related trends, culture, etc. And back in 2014 and 15, community members talked about the future importance of digital services. They generated papers on that subject. And so Sales Cavalcante, who was the director of strategic analysis, said, I think in the community, we have become really good in seeing insights before anybody else.
Hmm. Yeah. It's really cool because I know that Ericsson, they have done a like huge journey, like the last, I think it's 15, maybe longer, like 20 years to go from selling hardware basically to selling mm-hmm. services. So yeah, it's a really good story. You touched upon business models mm-hmm. a lot. So let's try to talk a little bit more about that. Like, How can you decide what business models is right for your organization? Do you see some that is, I think we talk a lot about like SaaS, like SaaS, like software, you know, this recurring revenue, digital services models a lot now. Do you see mm-hmm. any trends there? And how can you decide what business models to go for in your organization?
Well, there are many criteria you should look at. First, does the business model create value for the customers? That's the first question, because that is that's what a business model should do. Second, does it also capture value? So do we have a working profit formula? Is it sustainable in the long run? Is it difficult to copy? Is it internally consistent, etc.? So there are a number of criteria. What we do in projects when companies develop new business models, we very often have teams consisting of internals plus externals, can be industry experts or outsiders, startupers, customers, and so on. And they develop competing business models. And then we use the wisdom of crowds to select the business model. So we use a kind of market mechanism. And that's a very simple idea. So everyone gets virtual money and people can buy shares of the business models, and the share price reflects the value of a potential business model. So we use the wisdom of crowds to select the business models.
Okay, so it's a straightforward process, it sounds like.
It is. It's relatively simple, and it works really well, because Hayek, an Austrian economist, more than 80 years ago said price is a very efficient aggregator of information. So use virtual money, let people buy shares, and that reflects the value of the business model. And so every business model gets kind of price tag, and that helps you selecting the best business model. The idea comes from prediction markets that are that have been around since the 1980s.
Yeah. In the book, you also mentioned that usually innovation is not a trick to just come up with super cool new disruptive solutions, or you don't phrase it like that. But the hard part is to actually translate this into value. And you take Skype as an example. Like they mm-hmm. had, what was it, like over 600 million customers, but they didn't really earn money. I think we see these kind of growing companies, they grow a lot, but they give away it for free, and then they have a plan in the future to earn money, but it's like very tricky for them to translate to actually earning some money as well. Have you seen any, like, how to solve that? Any trends?
Yes, this is a big challenge, especially for startups. So they develop new ideas, new business models, and they focus so much on how can I create value for the customers? And Skype is a great example. It created so much value for the customers, but they for years have not found a formula how to make money with their business model. So when you develop a business model, the question, how can I capture value, is essential. And especially startups very often don't spend enough time analyzing this.
It feels like the strategy is to take in venture capital. Is that the wrong way to do it?
Taking in venture capital can be helpful on the one side, because it gives you the capital needed, of course. But on the other side, in my experience, if startups have too many resources, they lose the advantage they have. Namely, startups very often are so efficient and so fast because they lack resources. And therefore they have to think twice or three times before they do something. Give them too much money, and they lose that spirit of being very efficient, very fast, etc.
Yeah. let's say that you have chosen, you have traded, you have selected the business model that you want to pursue in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pilot it? Like just for part of the business, or do you need to implement it in the whole organization for the whole company? Or how do you do it? Like test it?
Yes, that really depends on what type of business model this is. If it is a disruptive business model for your organization, you should in any case separate it from the main organization. Because if it is disruptive, managers in the main organization will find 100 reasons why this is not going to work. And they will fight it because they realize it is killing my existing business. So you have to separate it and start with a separate unit, independent unit that has enough resources so that this unit must not compete against the main organization for resources. And I think what is also very important, this separate unit must be small enough that it is excited about small successes at the beginning. Because if you use the traditional yardsticks for such a disruptive new business model, it's not going to work because at the beginning, it's not making money for a long time.
Yeah. And maybe later then the whole organization, if the business model will work for the whole company, you can change it little by little later or...
Exactly. Then you can integrate it.
Yeah. So you can have several business models within a company at the same time.
Definitely. And I think in the context of disruption, I think companies also need to change their mindset. They need to develop a venture capitalist mindset, because with disruptive business models, you have the following problem. Many of them are going to fail. And a venture capital mindset is, of those 10 ideas, 2 may work, 8 might fail. And those 2 that work must be so successful that they compensate for the losses of those 8 that fail. So you need to develop a kind of failure tolerance for those new disruptive business models.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, I think that is just a question of, do I really understand the nature of disruption? The biggest problem of incumbents, of corporates, is that they are very risk averse, that they are not interested in small new markets. They need big markets to grow, to satisfy their growth needs. So usually when they decide to invest in a disruptive business model, it is very late, which means this disruption is already here. So they have to invest earlier. And you need to really understand the nature of disruption, these principles that are quite different from managing a company in normal times.
How do you organize yourself? You touched upon it a little bit, like you need to have a separate entity, maybe a separate like business within your organization. Like how to create the possibility for innovation to flourish organization-wise?
That again depends on the type of innovation. It is an incremental innovation.
And let's say disruptive with a disruptive one, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe let me tell you a story. It is Gisbert Rühl, who was the CEO of Klöckner Steel in Germany, one of the largest steel traders in the world, who a couple of years ago realized that his business model is very inefficient. He said, I don't really know what my customers need in the near future. I don't have something like predictive selling. The steel producer does not know what I need in the near future because I don't know what the customer needs in the near future. So the only way to deal with this problem is to keep steel on stock worth 1.5 billion euros. And he said that's very inefficient. That really calls for disruption. And then he was trying to understand what a new business model could be. And one day he decided to travel to Silicon Valley. There he talked to many people, startups, venture capitalists, and so on, asking them the same question again and again. And the question was, what would Silicon Valley do to disrupt, to totally disrupt steel trade? And the answer he got was very simple. We would build Amazon of steel trade, a digital platform. So Gisbert really realized, wow, this is really disruptive. And I have two options. Either I do it or somebody else does it. So when he came back to Germany, he called his manager and said, we are going to do this. We have to build Amazon of steel trade. To learn that it did not work for two reasons. The first reason was his managers, he installed an innovation team, and those should develop this digital platform. They were too conservative. They were not able to think radically enough. It was a very traditional company. So he realized it's not really going to work. And the second reason was, as soon as these managers understood what a digital business model would do to their existing business, the immune system of the company was activated. And there was a lot of resistance because they realized this new business model is killing the old company. So Gisbert Rühl saw only one solution to this problem. He went to Berlin. There he founded a startup, and this startup developed this new business model. And it became a huge success.
Klöckner didn't buy them. The startup.
It was founded by Klöckner.
Okay. Klöckner
founded
great.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they got like the freedom that they needed in order
exactly.
to make this work. Yeah.
Exactly. Freedom, resources.
Yeah.
Flexibility, different culture, etc.
I think that like a lot of leaders here, at least in Sweden, get appointed chief innovation officer. Within the organization that are already there. And I guess many of them express a lot of frustration because they are like in the old structure of the companies. So yeah, then they should break out and create a little startup on the side. Maybe it works better for them.
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah. Great. If we talk about like leadership, is it a specific like leadership traits or a specific type of leaders that is required to succeed with open strategy?
Yes, I think so. First, you must be a very open person. One of the pioneers of open strategy is a Red Hat. I think I have already mentioned it. Jim Whitehurst, CEO of Red Hat at that time. And Red Hat is probably one of the most open organizations we've encountered. He sees himself as a catalyst in chief. He says, my job as a catalyst is to steer the debate and ignite the conversation. So that is my job. And then from there, our employees, our managers, through their own conversations and debate, will drive the ultimate action. So the leader must be open to new ideas. He must ignite the conversation, but it's other people, employees, managers, who have to go on with the project. So now you might ask what the role of top management is in an open strategy. Open strategy, to avoid common misunderstanding, open strategy is not a democratization of decision making. The top management, the CEO, is still in charge. They ignite the process. And what's very important is that they must accept diversity. They also must be involved in discussions. They also must give feedback, but they must accept that there is a huge diversity of perspectives. And what they also have to do is they have to react to what employees suggest and be very transparent about decisions. Not every idea can be implemented, of course, but managers must give feedback. If there is absolutely no reaction on those ideas that are suggested, then open strategy will not survive for long in the organization.
No, like if you, I guess that's like connected to our human, as a human being, if you come with suggestions and you don't get any feedback, of course you get tired of coming with like suggestions if nobody cares, basically.
Absolutely. And employees accept it if your idea is not implemented, as long as you explain why.
Exactly. Yeah. This diversity of perspective, I know that, of course, part of it is having external people to get their perspective as well. But how do you make sure that you actually get that diversity of perspective connected to maybe role, background, geography, like demographics? Like how are you supposed to think when you, to create this diversity of perspective?
Basically, there are two ways. The first one is you make kind of open call. So who is interested in participating? The advantage of that is that you have those intrinsically motivated employees that take part in those open strategy processes. And the other way is to carefully invite hand-selected people. This is what we usually do when outsiders are invited. So it depends on the problem. What is the topic?
Do you need to pay them, the external people, or why do they want to help you otherwise?
Very good question. Usually not.
No. So no. What's in it for them? Why do they want to help?
Intrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
So what we tell them is we are going to develop a new business model for this company in this industry. This is the problem. And now we need a group of experts. And they are so much interested in those ideas that are discussed in exchanges with those other experts that they are willing to spend time in those workshops. So those workshops are usually 2 or 3 days long. And very often new ideas emerge for them they can use in their company, in their industry.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a great advice. Yeah. Because that I was wondering really, really much. I also thought a lot about when I was reading the book, because I'm very interested in change management and this, especially like the John Kotter 8 steps change model. I think it's a great like visualization of it all. Like you need to create a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And basically they're 70% of all initiatives fail. And I think it's a little bit the same when it comes to open strategy. It actually helps you to create this first sense of urgency. You put together like a great team, and then you create this vision together, and then you spread it. Like, so it helps a lot with this like change management. Would you say, like, how does open strategy, does it increase the possibility to succeed with the strategic initiatives even more than just change management as well?
Yes, I think there are two aspects. The first one is we have one tool we describe in the book. We call it the nightmare competitor. So that's a very simple exercise. The idea is you put together teams of internals with externals, outsiders, and their job is to imagine a disruptive new business model that would totally disrupt the existing business. And that's the outcome of that. That creates a kind of a sense of urgency, because you see it's not a safe haven. They are there are many new business models that could emerge, and now we have to react. So this is one thing, how to create the sense of urgency, the nightmare competitor approach. And the other thing, I mentioned it at the beginning, if you involve those, now I'm talking about involving internals, employees, if you involve those who have to execute the strategy, you create more commitment, you create a better understanding for the whole process, and you are faster in implementing. Let me maybe give you a good example of one company that involved 30,000 employees in a strategy process. It was Barclays, the bank. Back in 2012, the CEO realized that they needed a new strategy. There were fintechs attacking the existing business model. 30% of revenues were at risk. So he realized he needs a new strategy that must respond to all these challenges and mobilize 30,000 employees to support the change. So this is how he has done it. He started with establishing cross-functional councils, which were teams of managers to evaluate the current business state. At the same time, he established work groups existing of frontline employees very close to the customer, and they should answer the question, what should Barclays look like in 2020? Bringing this together, they developed a kind of a provisional strategy. This provisional strategy then was presented to thousands of employees in town hall meetings. They rented more than 70 theaters and cinemas in England to host all those employees. And those employees then fine-tuned the strategy with their knowledge, operational knowledge, with their customer knowledge, etc. And Ashok Vaswani said, a simple strategy understood by all is far better than a complex strategy understood by a few. So we must be able to formulate a strategy that is understood by every single employee. Hmm. Now they had their strategy fine-tuned. And then the final step was a one-week strategy jam. All 30,000 employees were invited. It was a 2 days moderated online discussion. And every employee could contribute, ask questions, etc. And Ashok Vaswani said there probably wasn't one single employee of our 30,000 colleagues who would not have known what our strategy was. The outcome of this process was a mobile banking platform, UK's most popular fintech product with more than 9 million customers.
Yeah, that's a success. Yeah, that's really cool. The biggest challenge for organizations that want to adapt open strategy?
We have already tackled some of them. First one is, do I have the mindset? Do I have an open mindset? Second, very often is, it's a massive involvement, like in the case of Barclays. It sounds very expensive and time-consuming to involve 30,000 employees. But if you involve those who implement the strategy, implementation will be faster and much better. And one of the problems executives very often have is outsiders and frontline employees can be brutally honest. So you must be able to deal with diverse ideas, accept that the outcome of such a process can be totally unexpected. So the challenges or hurdles, in my view, are more have more to do with the mindset, with the culture, with those soft facts.
Yeah, I guess as well that you hear a lot about that people have questions like how to handle sensitive information if you open up your strategy work.
That is also a very common concern. But this is what we tell the companies, and most of them understand it. First, for companies that do open strategy, speed and access to external knowledge is more important than the risk of knowledge leakage. I think corporates can learn from startups here. PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel once said the greatest risk for a startup is that they are inventing something that already exists.
Yeah.
And that risk can be reduced through openness. Talk to many people. If you make a secret out of your project, you've already lost. So that's the first thing we tell companies. Second, opening strategy does not mean that you have to reveal everything. You don't have to open the whole strategy process to benefit from open strategy. In the idea generation phase, secrecy is less of a problem. It's just generating ideas for potential new business models, for example. In this phase, you benefit a lot from external ideas, and you don't have to give away a lot of internal information. In the formulation phase, when you formulate this business model or the strategy, you need more internal knowledge. So very often companies involve more internals than externals. And then in the implementation phase, you don't need much external input. So there is less need to involve outsiders, and there is less risk of knowledge leakage. And third, there are ways to protect your knowledge. Carefully selecting the externals, non-disclosure agreements, etc. But we have in the book a very nice story, and this is eye-opening, because if you are creative, you will find ways to deal with secrecy. It's about the CIA, and it was back in 2014 when there was a idea contest on the internet. And in this idea contest, the sponsor of the idea contest, it was not known who the sponsor of the contest was, but they were looking for an algorithm for tracking bison migration in Yellowstone National Park to track bison health, bison herds, etc. And the idea was, can anybody develop an algorithm based on photographs tourists take and upload on social media, photographs that have a timestamp and GPS location? So based on that, it should be able to track bison migration in the national park. And they got an algorithm, and it was a success. But the interesting thing here is, in reality, it was not about bison migration, but the US intelligence community wanted to tap the wisdom of crowd to help with a very different kind of problem, tracking Russian military personnel operating in the contest territory of Crimea. So that was, of course, not disclosed, but they found a way how to hide the problem they were trying to solve. If the CIA, one of the most secretive organizations in the world, can use open strategy approaches, every company that can.
Yeah, then you have no excuses. Then you just need to think a little bit differently. I love that story. That's awesome. For people listening to this podcast, they think, okay, this sounds great, open strategy, but how can I get started? Of course, they need to read the book, but otherwise, like, what's the first step to take?
Start with small pilot projects. That's what we recommend. Open up gradually. It's kind of trial and error. See what works and what does not work. And there are then many decisions you have to make. Should I involve internals? Should I involve externals? Should I use online tools like strategy jams or crowdsourcing platforms? Or should I use analog tools, workshops, etc.? Which phase in the strategy phase? So there are many questions. So my recommendation is start with a small project and, well, read our book or talk to people that have experience with open strategy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good summary or like tip how to get started with open strategy. Thank you so much, Kurt Metzler, for joining Swedish Innovation Podcast. And if people want to connect with you, of course, they can read the book and maybe they find you on LinkedIn as well to connect
yes.
with you.
Yeah, it would be a pleasure.
Great. Thank you so much and good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you like what we're doing, remember to subscribe. And if you really like our podcast, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. Remember, innovation is what makes the impossible possible, and it will all start with you.